This is KJZZ, your member-supported news and information station. I'm Catherine Fritke, and these are the stories you don't want to miss. For the week of June 12th, here are some top stories. For the first time since the days of Martha Washington, the Navy named a warship for a living woman. The USS Gabrielle Giffords recognizes the former Arizona congresswoman who survived a 2011 assassination attempt that resulted in the death of six people in Tucson. KJZZ's Mariana Dale reports from Galveston, Texas.
The commissioning of a ship is like its birthday, the day it officially joins the Navy fleet.
Quartermaster, hoist the colors and commissioning pennant.
Aye, aye, sir.
The dominating gray USS Gabrielle Giffords is dressed for a party, decked in colorful flags and moored in the port of Galveston. The woman she's named for spoke slowly and carefully to the crowd.
This is an incredible honor. The USS Gabrielle Giffords is strong and tough, just like her crew.
Giffords stood beside ship sponsor Jill Biden as she gave a time-honored order.
Man our ship and bring her to life!
Aye, aye, ma'am!
Dozens of sailors in white run up the gangplank, medals clinking. They will be the first crew to sail a ship named for a living woman in more than 100 years.
Ship namings have gone through big change over the years.
Retired Vice Admiral Pete Daly says traditionally, ships were named for battles, places, and long-gone military figures. But last year, the Navy announced something different. A few ships would be named for activists such as Harvey Milk and Sojourner Truth.
You know, it's not always apolitical.
And Daly says he doesn't like the controversy.
We should not have Democratic ships or Republican ships. We should have ship names that bring people together.
The USS Gabrielle Giffords commissioning brought together hundreds of people, families of the crew, dignitaries, and veterans like Joe McPhail.
I was in the Marine Corps, all of World War II and Korea. I'm 95 years old.
He's impressed with the ship's technology and its namesake.
She's a patriot, there's no doubt about it, and I'm glad they're doing that. They don't do that many times for women.
Vice Chief of Naval Operations Bill Moran says to absolutely expect more ships named for women.
Why wouldn't we? We're more integrated today than we've ever been.
Women are still the overwhelming minority in every branch of the military. They make up 18% of the Navy. It's something the armed forces want to change.
The majority of talented young men and women coming out of college today are young women. So we want them to come serve with us.
Giffords knows what it's like to blaze a trail. She was the youngest woman elected to the Arizona Senate. She had just started her third term in a competitive congressional district when she was shot. Her husband is retired astronaut and Navy Captain Mark Kelly. We spoke by phone a few days before the commissioning.
You know, she's somebody who's tough. She doesn't give up.
She relearned to walk, to speak. She got back on a horse, literally. Kelly says he hopes this serves as an inspiration to the ship's crew.
When they get into tough spots and things are maybe not going as they had planned, I hope they think about its namesake. Gabby, on her darkest days, was just incredibly positive.
In addition to sharing Giffords' name, the ship shares a motto with her family coat of arms. It translates to, "I am ready." Reporting from Galveston, Mariana Dale, KJZZ News.
And now from KJZZ's The Show. There have been congressional hearings over the last 2 weeks, and it's driving the ratings. Here's The Show's Steve Goldstein.
The Senate hearing that featured testimony by former FBI Director James Comey saw TV ratings go through the roof. Not a typical public reaction to watching the Senate. Just check Nielsen's numbers for C-SPAN. So what explains the passionate TV viewing for this particular event? With me is Benjamin Mullen, managing editor of Pointer.org, a nonprofit media watchdog. Benjamin, why were people glued to their sets or their smart devices to watch Comey?
Well, you know, I think the James Comey hearing was one of those rare occasions in politics where it doesn't matter which team you play for, you're going to be fascinated no matter what, right? So James Comey is, he's become a little bit of a polarizing figure. People on the right now see James Comey's testimony as vindicating President Trump. People on the left see James Comey's testimony as implicating Donald Trump, right? So I think basically James Comey's testimony last week was a bit of a Rorschach test. If you believe that Trump was innocent, you wanted to tune in to see James Comey exonerate your candidate or your president. If you thought he was guilty, you wanted to tune in to see James Comey throw him under the bus. So I think that's what explains the bipartisan interest in his testimony.
So a lot of people call this the Super Bowl of politics, at least in this context and where we're at right now. And one of the things about the Super Bowl is, you know, it's going to be the two teams. You mentioned there's the Trump side, there's the Comey side. But also, most years, there's that two-week gap between the championship game and the Super Bowl. So what about this? The fact we knew several days in advance this was happening, did that help build it up?
I certainly think it did. You know, you saw pundits taking the opportunity to hype it up almost as if it was a competitive sports game. You also saw news organizations taking advantage of social media technology in advance of the hearing to stream it live. They made I saw Bloomberg, the financial newswire, made arrangements with Twitter to stream it live. You definitely did see people taking advantage of the hype. CNN notably had a James Comey countdown clock, which, you know, they have a countdown clock, it seems, for every other big event. But it definitely did seem like it came with the pomp and circumstance of a World Series or a Super Bowl or a, you know, NBA Finals, to use a more current reference.
And you mentioned that President Trump did not tweet, but many, many, many other people did. In fact, here in Arizona, we heard a lot about how John McCain had flubbed a lot of things, and many people were focusing on how Comey came across. This question gets asked with every major event now. How much did social media affect this?
It's a really good question, and it's hard to measure because we don't have viewership metrics as accurate as Nielsen ratings for what we call distributed data, right? So we don't have a very good estimation of how many people were watching the Comey hearings off platform on platforms like Facebook, Twitter. You know, I'm sure there was a Snapchat recap of his testimony too. There are all these social media platforms that don't have as refined a metric score as do cable television. And so it's kind of hard to tell how many people were actually watching Comey's testimony in its entirety. But I would wager that it was a significant amount, especially because nowadays you hear a lot of talk about cord cutters or cord nevers, the millennials munching their avocado toast and not subscribing to cable television. I think that was a huge factor.
There were some people who noted that during the James Comey hearing, there was also another important Senate hearing related to some extent to the future of the Affordable Care Act. And it was a very, very serious hearing. And unless you were a big fan of C-SPAN, you weren't watching it. So what does that say about that people are really drawn to this sort of mano a mano thing as opposed to maybe a more serious issue, maybe?
There's this pundit / comedian named John Lovett. And he has a weekly radio show. It's a podcast called Love It or Leave It. And he has one segment called There's Just So Much Going On Right Now, in which he takes a segment of something that isn't really in the news because it's all overshadowed by the Trump-Russia investigation and the various machinations and investigations going on with the Trump, you know, the Trump White House. And there's just a phenomenal amount of stuff that people don't pay attention to, myself included, because they're so busy with the main event of the day. And I think it's because people like myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people, it's easier to understand Comey versus Trump or Comey versus the White House. It's maybe a little bit harder to grasp the nuances of White House policy. And so I think maybe that's why you're seeing people identify with what's a more easily understandable narrative.
And for anyone who's had an issue with a boss, here's a guy who got fired and gets to go in front of the Senate and millions of people and complain about him.
Yeah, it's something we all wish we could do at one point or another.
Benjamin Mullen is managing editor of Pointer.org, a nonprofit media watchdog. We've been talking about why so many people tuned in to watch or listen to James Comey's Senate testimony.
You're listening to the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Here's a story from our education desk. A state audit found Gilbert Public Schools miscounted students and, as a result, owes the Arizona Department of Education close to $1 million. From the KJZZ East Valley Bureau, Mariana Dale reports the district is appealing the audit.
Specifically, Gilbert Public Schools is refuting two findings. First, that it miscalculated the attendance of more than 500 high school students, and second, that the district inaccurately reported attendance for 1,300 online students. This resulted in the state overpaying the district almost $1 million. The audit investigated data from fiscal years 2014 to 2016. The state gives Arizona public schools a base dollar amount for each student and additional money if students need other services. Audits show Gilbert was one of several school districts that could owe the state money. Mariana Dale, KJZZ News, Tempe.
From the Fronteras desk. A month ago, the murder of a respected reporter brought attention to the killing of journalists in Mexico. And while some organizations call for justice, the Mexican government is offering a reward. From KJZZ's Mexico City Bureau, Rodrigo Cervantes reports.
This Thursday will be a month since Javier Valdez was murdered in Sinaloa. Valdez was the sixth journalist to be killed in 2 months in Mexico. His death reignited a fight for freedom of the press. The Mexican government has been under pressure and is now offering a reward of about $83,000 to anyone who may lead to the assassins. Marcela Turati is a co-founder of Periodistas de a Pie, a Mexican organization that fights for journalists' rights. She thinks the reward is a bad joke from the government.
I feel really angry because it seems like they just noticed that the journalist has been killed.
The International Committee to Protect Journalists is pushing a social media campaign with the hashtag Our Voice is Our Strength. They want to urge the Mexican government to act. Jean Albert Hudson is the correspondent in Mexico for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
We met with President Peña Nieto in May. He made several commitments, and 1 or 2 weeks after that, there's another 2 murders of journalists, which obviously means that there's a lot of work to do. The violence cannot continue.
Rodrigo Cervantes, KJZZ News, Mexico City.
In a check of business news, later this month, Phoenix leaders are expected to discuss changing street names, specifically two names that some people find offensive. But as Christina Estes reports from the KJZZ business desk, others say the cost is too high.
Not far from busy Union Hills Drive and Tatum Boulevard is a quiet residential area.
And the street that I live on is East Robert E. Lee Street.
It's where Ivan Milosavljevic has lived for nearly 17 years.
You know, it's where all my memories are.
City records show the street was named after the Confederate general in 1961. Now Phoenix's mayor says it's time for a change. Councilwoman Kate Gallego agrees.
We have people in our community who find Robert E. Lee's name celebrates slavery, and we have to take that seriously. We want to have street names that reflect our values.
I don't even tie it to the Confederacy. It's just my address.
Changing his address, Milosavljevic says, would not only be inconvenient, but also costly for the family's custom-crafted metal shop.
To change all of our letterhead, business cards, that sort of thing.
Similar concerns can be heard along the one-mile stretch of Squaw Peak Drive. But Gallego sides with those who say the street name contains a derogatory word for Native American women.
Normally, when people use the terms that are offensive to a certain gender, we step up and act, and we ought to have the tools to be able to do that here.
Current policy calls for 75% of homeowners to agree to a name change, but the council is expected to discuss a new policy that specifically addresses offensive names. Christina Estes, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, this week in the world of science, members of the medical and hacker communities are raising concerns about cybersecurity vulnerabilities affecting medical records, infrastructure, and devices. From the Arizona Science Desk, KJZZ's Nicholas Gerbis reports.
The time to ask if a pacemaker is safe from malicious hackers is before hooking one up to your heart, but we lack that luxury when arrhythmias come knocking. Experts have long warned of critical security flaws in medical devices, insulin pumps that can deliver deadly doses, for example. Ransomware like the WannaCry virus, which shut down at least 16 hospitals in Great Britain and could spread to devices, has taken those concerns from serious to critical.
When thousands of patients have these devices, or even hundreds of thousands who interact with the healthcare system are exposed, it's clear that we need to do something about it.
That's Christian Demeff, an emergency medicine doctor. He and pediatrician Jeff Tully, both white hat hackers and alums of University of Arizona College of Medicine in Phoenix, organized a recent CyberMed Summit on campus. Tully says shared code and hardware among devices means shared vulnerabilities.
It's really kind of starting from the ground up when we design these types of things to build cybersecurity in as a primary ingredient and not as an afterthought.
Tully says he doesn't want to be alarmist, and officials are starting to take notice. The Cybersecurity Act of 2015's Health Task Force released its recommendations this month, and the Food and Drug Administration is taking a stronger role too. Nicholas Gerbis, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
This has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. made possible in part by Vitalist Health Foundation, the IEEE Foundation, the Arizona Community Foundation, ASU Research, Alliance Bank of Arizona, Beach Fleischmann, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Catherine Furkey, and this is KJZZ, your news and information source.